Okay, so action. So thanks a lot for joining me for this discussion. Byron, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell me a little bit about your background and how you became an expert on job search and the recruiting space in general. And then today we'll talk a little bit about the recruiting process and the how a fresh college graduate goes about starting their job search and getting their career off on the right foot.
Sure, absolutely. So I worked as a executive recruiter and a tech recruiter in the Boston area and the New York City market as well for around 5 years. So that's where I originally built my expertise and just seeing hundreds or possibly even thousands of candidates go through the job application process and interview process. And I've definitely looked at thousands of LinkedIn profiles and resumes, if you include all the folks who didn't get the interview. And so that's where I started to see all the patterns of who gets hired, who doesn't get a callback, and all those sorts of things. Since then, I run my own job search website and blog, Career Sidekick. So that's where I've continued to test things and help job seekers since leaving recruitment behind. That's kind of my story for the past, I guess, 10 years or so. Before that, I really struggled as a fresh graduate myself. I got a degree in finance, but I never got a finance job. I didn't know how to job search, hadn't built a network. So I was kind of asking people for help, but I didn't have any relationship with them and they didn't help me. And now I understand why, but I did struggle. And that's something I remember. So something I try to help other job seekers with now.
Cool. Okay. So I guess your own journey then kind of you lived through all of this stuff yourself in a way. So you learned it by doing it. And I think it's going to give you an interesting perspective that will be helpful to a lot of Lenses readers as well.
Hope so,
So
yeah.
cool. So just to get started, what are the challenges that a recent graduate or someone who's preparing to graduate would face? And how do they go about getting started if they're trying to enter the real world, unquote?
Well, I think one challenge that a lot of job seekers say to me directly, or I see them post about online, is just feeling like every company wants experience. And it's kind of the catch-22 of how do I can't get experience because every company wants to hire somebody who already has experience. And then, so how do you get that first job? And then, you know what, I'm not really explaining it well, but you know, how do you get that first position when every position wants you to already have work experience? But there are true entry-level positions out there, and I think it's just about focusing on what you can control. You can't change a company's hiring requirements, or you know, you're not going to persuade a company to drop their experience requirements, but there are true entry-level positions out there. I think it's good to find them through your network if possible, which is something I failed at as a new graduate, new job seeker. But the more you can do that, the better. Talking to your network and talking to even professors and your career center at your university, if you just graduated or if you're still enrolled and just working on your final year there, maybe that's a really good way to find out about different things, and those people will have some insights into which companies really do hire entry-level people. But so that's one of the big obstacles.
So how would a conversation like that, how would you find people to talk to in your network about these issues, and how would you start a conversation with them? What kinds of questions would you ask, et cetera?
I like to ask for a piece of information, and I like to ask for something really small and simple to start. I find that a lot of job seekers they're trying to do networking, but they ask for something so huge to begin that it's just too much for the person receiving your message. Like asking me to introduce you to the hiring manager in my current group is just too much, or asking me to forward your resume to the CEO of my company, you know, if I had a CEO. It's just too much. So I find it better to ask for like a piece of intel. Like you could ask somebody if they have a sense of how their industry is doing. Say, hey, I noticed you're in the automotive industry. I know many industries have faced a lot of layoffs this year, and it's been a tough year in terms of what's happening in the broad economy and in the world right now. So do you have a sense of how your industry is doing, and would you recommend applying to companies in this space now? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Something like that. It's very non-threatening. And people like to be seen as an expert, and people, it's a compliment if you ask somebody for their opinion or their perspective on something. So people are usually happy to answer, and they appreciate that you thought there's somebody who might know. That's one way that I like to.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, often we're really hesitant to ask people for advice because you think you're going to insult them, but what is a person going to do? Of course, they're going to be, most people are very innately helpful. And if you ask someone respectfully for advice based on their experience, they're happy to offer it. So I like your approach. It sounds like it's very much about building a relationship instead of just jumping in and saying, hey, can you give me this or that?
Yeah, and that was my problem as a new graduate. I remember I got my finance degree and I messaged a guy, I can't even remember his name, but I messaged another young man who had gotten hired at a very reputable finance firm in Boston. And I asked if he could help me get an interview there, but we had no relationship and I had never helped him with anything. And the fact that I can't remember his name just sort of solidifies my point here that I didn't know him well enough and I hadn't put in the effort to have him recommend me to his employer. So yeah, you got to slowly build a relationship.
I have come across this saying before, I'm not sure where, but there's this, you know, your network is your net worth. So it's the inherent value of a network long-term, like the more you cultivate it, the more worth you're going and value you're going to get out of it. And it sounds like that's really hard for someone who's just finishing college. They might not have a network yet, so they have to build it up selectively. And like what you're saying is a way to start building a network. So what happens once you start a conversation like that? You get a bit of intel from someone, or you have a soft entryway. You don't just bust in through the barn door, but you get connected with someone at a company that you're, say, interested in working in. What's the next step? Do you ask them to refer you to someone else? Obviously you have to keep the relationship warm, maybe. Do you have any advice for how to get value out of the network and continue? What's the next step in that journey, basically?
Yeah, well, I think you kind of have to read the situation. And the general idea is to progress further and further and get to the point where you are at a level where you can ask them for a big favor. So I think it always depends, but you sort of have to read the situation. But if they seem open to sharing information and they're pretty responsive and receptive to your first message, I think you can ask if they, you know, hey, do you happen to know if your company's hiring right now? Or do you know if your group is looking to grow this year? It sounds like you're saying the industry overall is doing well, something like that. And I think it's good to remember that a lot of bigger companies have a referral program where they pay, if a current employee of theirs refers or recommends somebody who ends up getting hired, that current employee could stand to make hundreds or even $1,000 to $2,000 as a referral bonus. So you may actually be helping somebody by asking if they can refer you to a hiring manager or a team. So you shouldn't be afraid to do it. I just don't think it should be in the first message, and you should sort of read the situation. And it's easier said than done to read each particular conversation, but try to adjust your approach based on what they're giving you and what they're saying to you.
So just like in a real human interaction context, in a way, but there's obviously there are no like fixed rules for this, exactly how to do it in every case that would work all the time, but just to keep in mind, generally, you're building a relationship. Don't ask for everything up front. Read the situation, respond, and then ultimately, you know, pursue your goal, right? Tactfully.
Yeah. I think it's just about doing it tactfully. And sometimes I like to make it clear why I'm messaging them. So even if you're not asking for that big favor right away, you do want to be very, you don't want to just say, hi, how are you? Like in a LinkedIn message. You want to make it really clear. I was considering applying to this industry or this company. It's one of the top one other approach that I love is you message an employee at a company. Mm-hmm. You say, hey, let's say on LinkedIn, you can message them and say, hey, I noticed you shifted over to Microsoft 3 years ago in their R&D team. How have you liked the work environment since joining there? I've read a number of really positive reviews online. Of course, there are a lot for Microsoft, but I always like to hear firsthand about how the work environment is. So anything you could share would be great.
Okay, that's great.
That's one of my favorite angles, just asking how's the work environment. And then if they respond, then you can say, oh, that's great to hear. That sort of reaffirms what I was thinking, that this would be a great employer to try to pursue a position with. I saw a position online in the XYZ team. Do you happen to know that hiring manager? I was thinking of applying, but I'd love to find a way to make sure my resume doesn't get lost in the shuffle online. And so you're kind of hinting at, you know, you're seeing maybe they will say, hey, yeah, I know that hiring manager. Send me your resume.
Yeah.
Or they might say no, but at least you're asking.
So you're making it easy for them in a way. I mean, you're inviting them to tell you more. It's pretty clear what you want. You're not beating around the bush, but you're also not demanding something from them. I like the approach a lot.
Yeah, never demanding. Yeah.
Yeah. And also the idea that you're offering value to them, because the referral fees, that's a very real thing. And that's something I don't hear mentioned very often. It's true. That's really, really useful. Have you ever tried contacting someone who is, let's say, so you're a fresh grad, you know what you want to be, you can imagine where you want to be in 15 years. So if you're entering, you know, ad agency, and they're like, you say you've got a degree in communications and you think you want to be a copywriter at an ad agency, work on big campaigns. So you contact someone at BBDO who's a copywriter. Is there value in, say, asking them, hey, how did you get to your position? Like, what was your career path? Because I'm just getting started. And I'd love to be in your place in 15, 20 years. What was it like for you? Or is that just too vague?
No, I think that's absolutely brilliant. I'm glad you said it. That's one of the best things you can do, because that in itself is sort of a form of a compliment. So like we talked about earlier, it'll be well received.
Right.
And I think people who have, like, quote unquote, made it or succeeded, or they're in a job they love, they like to give back. And I know, even just having my own blog and online business that's doing well now, when people come to me for tips, I'm happy to help them. Like, I get excited to help them. So I think that strategy you just named would be perfect. It's a brilliant way to do it.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's great. Like, there's also the issue for a fresh graduate of an internship versus a real job. Is there advice that you could give to someone, maybe a rule of thumb, or do internships matter? What's the relationship between an internship and is it a stepping stone to a job, or should you pursue it as an end in itself? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's complicated. I think there's a big difference if you're still a student, let's say in your senior year in university, versus like if you graduated and you're looking for a job now.
Right.
I guess if you're still in university, you'd want to assess whether the internship could lead to a job. Mm-hmm. Sometimes employers are pretty clear about whether it can or cannot or may, or, you know, how likely that is. And you can ask them during the assessment and interview process for that. I think in general, though, you should aim for what you want. So if you graduated and you want a paid position, I think you should pursue a paid position. I think no matter what you do, it takes a lot of effort. It takes time. It takes conversations. It requires many rejections often. Mm-hmm. So you might as well just go after what it is you really want. You know, the thing that you're going to be truly excited about when you get it, because you're going to be spending this time either way.
That is actually the perfect segue into another question that I was dying to ask you, which is the idea of a dream job. A lot of younger people who are graduating now, they might have grown up with this idea, which is currency in the culture. You know, like, you should follow your passion, pursue your dream. And sometimes no one is sure, how do I get to that dream? Do I have to pursue that from the beginning, or is it easier to start out with just a job and work my way up, pursue it as a side hustle? How do you navigate this dilemma as a young person starting out, trying to decide, do you just go all in on your dream, or do you work your way towards it selectively? How do you approach that?
I suppose if you're one of the young people who's fortunate enough to have like a crystal clear picture of what your dream is, which was not me, that was not me, then yeah, pursue it, do everything, talk to people who have that dream, ask how they got there. Network, go get it. But if not, you shouldn't worry, because I think a lot of people's careers are fluid and they shift, and just focus on learning skills and exposing yourself to a wide range of tasks and companies and challenges when you're young, and seeing what you like. I think it's most people, I think if they went and planned out 10 or 20 years on paper as a 21-year-old, 22-year-old, it's not, the reality isn't going to end up looking anything like that. And it can, that can actually be a fantastic thing. I mean, just thinking of my own story of graduating with a bachelor's degree in finance and never getting a finance job, and then having a couple of dead end jobs that I hated, including getting fired a couple of days after Christmas, quitting one job after 2 weeks, and then becoming a recruiter pretty much randomly, and then discovering what it's really about, and then using that recruiting knowledge to start a blog that's now replaced my full-time income and more. I shouldn't say random, but it's just so unpredictable. I never could have guessed that I'd fall into a recruiter job, learn all that knowledge, and then be able to monetize that and build a career off just sharing the info. So I think it's completely okay if you're not sure, just build skills, build valuable skills, build your network too.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's helpful to think that you don't, if you have a dream, sure, go for it. And even if you do, maybe there's value in just being open to what happens, to not necessarily fixating, being open to, wow, okay, this, I'm actually good at this job, or this particular aspect of the career that I thought I wanted interests me more than the one that I'm in. Maybe I can do a little sidewinder and try that instead. It's inspiring that you were able to find your way to something that you're really, really passionate about and happy in, that you didn't necessarily intend initially in the form that it's taking now. And it's like, it's a dream that a lot of people are chasing intentionally. So it's interesting. Yeah. Thanks.
One idea that what you said just brought this idea to mind.
Yeah.
You might not be able to find your dream job right away. You might not want to know what that is, but look for your dream boss, because that makes the biggest difference, in my opinion. Fine, okay. Because a great boss will let you test different areas and expose yourself to different areas. And what comes to mind for me is the CEO of my first recruitment firm that I worked for. And she let me interview internal candidates that we were thinking of hiring. She let me train new employees and mentor them. She gave me a promotion to project manager, and I ended up hating it and being a pretty immature, terrible leader at the time. And I stepped down, but still, I just had so many opportunities. So find a great boss that lets you test things and doesn't just say, well, you know, sorry, that's not on your job description. You want somebody who's really going to be excited to help you grow and explore your professional interests in your 20s. A good boss makes all the difference.
Very good advice. Okay. So to move on to something in the process, like resume building. Once I've got my network established, or I start making connections with companies, let's say I've identified what my goals are, maybe my dream job, maybe not, but I know what I'm aiming for the next couple of years to get started. How do I construct a resume that's compelling? Once I have an opportunity to get that under the right person's nose, how do I build a resume? How do I take my lack of experience and turn it into a format that someone is going to want to hire me for?
I think if you have no work experience, then your academic experience is your work experience. So you want to put as much there as possible, any like clubs or activities you participated in. I think that for GPA, if it's above 3.0 out of 4.0, then list it, projects, presentations you gave, really anything, because that is your experience. But also if you held jobs, even like part-time summer jobs, don't underestimate your ability to position that in a way that'll be attractive to employers. So include that on your resume too, or obviously internships as well. But so for example, in high school and while beginning university, I worked at Whole Foods Market and I was a cashier and I was promoted to supervisor. And even after graduating, so 4 years later, I graduate with my bachelor's in finance. And in those first few interviews, or really for the first few years, even after graduating, because I had multiple jobs and I was fired and all of that, employers showed so much interest in that Whole Foods job. And it didn't matter that it was before I had a degree and that it was a retail service industry job, nothing to do with the office jobs I was applying for, but it actually did have a lot to do with it because I had been promoted I showed that I had gone from cashier to supervisor, and there's only one reason that a company promotes somebody. It's that they're doing well and they trust that person. And I was supervising a team and I was interacting with customers on the phone and in person. And so all of a sudden I had actually done all of these things that employers really valued, even if it was in a little big grocery store, but you know, a supermarket outside of Boston. So don't discount your experience. Even if you were like a referee for children's soccer or basketball, or like an assistant, like a volunteer assistant coach, a volunteer at a summer camp, anything with leadership or with showing that you had to be organized or that you were trusted by any type of organization. If you were given some type of role at your church or a local club or anything like that, I think is really good to show.
So just because I had a night shift at the 7-Eleven, I don't have to be ashamed of that or hide it.
No, definitely not. If you're handling cash at the 7-Eleven, that also shows trust. They, you know, responsible for $3,000 to $10,000 in cash per night, or, you know, maintain 100% bookkeeping accuracy or something like that. There's always a way.
Yeah, I mean, you could say we were robbed at gunpoint, and yet I had 100% bookkeeping accuracy and was able to prove my ninja training to defend the other employees or something. It sounds like it's about storytelling, right? So it's connecting the dots between the job that you're applying for and whatever this past experience was, just framing it in a way that translates into, okay, I learned from this experience. Here's how it applies to the current opportunity. Here's why I'm the person for the job.
Exactly. Yeah. Framing it to be interesting and relevant to your new audience now, which for me was like those corporate employers.
Right.
Yeah, you've got to think about them and their, because when they post a job, they're thinking about themselves. They have needs, they have problems that they need to be solved or projects they need help with. So when they receive your resume in their system, however you applied, they're thinking about their own needs and they're thinking, can this person step in and help us with this? So your resume is actually a marketing document that should be proving to this employer that you can come in and help them with the exact things that they've put on their job description, because that's exactly what they're worried about.
Okay. So, I mean, you're basically saying you have to be empathic a little bit and realize that you're applying to a real person and tell your story in a way that's going to get their attention and show that you can solve their problems or help solve their problems.
Yeah.
How do you know just from reading a job description what they're really saying? Is there kind of, can you read between the lines and figure out what's the actual situation, the person they're looking for, as opposed to the bullet points that they put on the job description? Because in my experience, at least half of the time, the job description isn't what they're really looking for. There's either some kind of company boilerplate basic job description that people copy paste and then they might change a few things, or there's a team involved that keeps tacking things on to what, and it's not really necessarily what they're looking for. Like, how do you tell as someone who's applying for your job, is there a rule of thumb to tell what they're really looking for?
I don't have some like magic cure-all method, I guess, but there are certainly good job descriptions and bad ones, yeah. But assuming the job description is decent, I think you can obviously look what's written on the page, but also the order. So usually the first couple of bullet points are what are most important to them.
Oh, okay, so that's good.
Kind of think about the order that things appear on the page, and also frequency. You might see something appear twice. So sometimes on a job description, there are like 10 to 20 bullets, but also a paragraph or two. And so if you see, they mention the ability to work in a fast-paced environment in the first sentence of the first paragraph, and then let's say it's like the second bullet among all the bullet points. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear that they think their environment's fast-paced and that they really, really want somebody who can do that. And so it'd be a good idea for you to think about, did you work under any tight deadlines in school or in internships or jobs? Maybe you were a cashier serving 100 customers a day, or maybe you had to lead 3 projects at the same time during your final month of school or something like that.
Okay. Are there warning signs that you might look for that would tell you as an applicant, I'm not sure I want to work for this company, or this might not be the ideal job for me?
I'd go have the interview. I mean, the job, you shouldn't apply to every job. If the job duties don't actually interest you and aren't going to bring you a step closer to your goals, then by all means, forget it. But no, if you see something that just worries you a little bit about the company culture or like how they would I would just go have the interview.
Okay.
And then in that interview, there are a ton of warning signs that I would hate. Everybody's different. I would hate to be micromanaged. I hate being treated like a, like I hate a robotic organization where everybody, where there's kind of no leeway and everything's by the book. And, you know, we don't leave till 6 p.m. So you're sitting here, you know, I don't like that type of structure. Everybody's different, but I think you find that out in the interview when you, I mean, now so many interviews are virtual, but I was going to say when you walk through the office, see how people are dressed, see how people act, see if they're talking to each other. Hopefully we return to that office environment soon so you can get a sense of that type of thing. But
okay. Has the interview process itself changed? I mean, it's seems to be more in a startup environment, at least, there are multiple interviews to get a job. Do young people need to expect to have to go through multiple phases now?
Yeah, I think it's becoming more common, more rounds, or having multiple people on a single Zoom interview, maybe like a panel, a virtual panel interview. But yeah, I think you're going to talk to multiple people. But I sort of think that's good. And in my last recruiting job for a firm called Winter Wyman in Boston, I met with every single member of our team, five or six people, including the people who would just be my peers. And this was a fantastic company. This was a top-notch company. And so it's not just them trying to hassle you and put you through a lot. It's they, in this case, they really wanted to find somebody who wanted this job and would fit with the team. So yeah, expect a lot of rounds, but sometimes it's good to meet more than just your immediate boss. I suppose that's what I'm trying to say.
That makes sense. I mean, it's also a chance for you to interview the company on a few different levels and get a larger picture of, instead of just what one person says the company is like, you hear the stories of a couple of different people from different areas of the company. You can kind of put two and two together and figure out what the company's really like. That makes sense.
That's what they did. They put me in the room with a young woman around my, actually younger than me, who is just another recruiter on this team that I would be joining. And she said, listen, whatever you ask me doesn't leave this room. You know, I'm not the boss. I had already talked to the boss, Ian. And she said, you know, if you have any real questions about it, what it's like to work here, I joined within the last year and we can talk about that. She said something to that effect. I don't remember the exact words, but that actually made me really excited about the role. Seemed like a great company, and it was based on that. So it's good if you're meeting a lot of people. I think it's a good sign for a job seeker.
Cool. Well, let's say you make it through all these five phases or however many you have to, and you get to the end where you have to negotiate your salary. That can be pretty tricky and scary for a lot of people, especially if you don't have experience with salary negotiation. And I mean, some people are caught off guard by the fact that they have to do this at all. How do I go about that if for the first time someone asks me, what do you expect? What's your salary expectations?
I'd recommend doing your research. So there are a lot of sites like Payscale, Glassdoor, and just many other salary tools. If you search Google for salary calculator, salary tool. So do your research for that type of job in your particular city. So you know, like a baseline. But then if they ask for your expectations, I would recommend saying, and I've recommended this for years, but I would say that you're looking for the position that's the best fit for your career, and you're looking to find the right fit. And once you've done that, you're willing to consider an offer that they feel is fair. But at this point in your job search, you don't have an exact number in mind, and you're really focused on looking at roles to find that right fit. And I found that to work pretty well. If they keep pushing you, you can give a range and you can say, well, you know, in my research, I've seen that this type of job here in Seattle, let's say, tends to pay between $50,000 to $78,000. And so I think if we're somewhere in that range, then it makes a lot of sense to keep talking here. But I would not give a specific number before you know exactly what the role involves. I suppose you're asking me about the end of the process, though. No,
you answered that. It's really interesting. I'm glad that you said that. I have heard the opposite as well, which is that like there's this anchoring technique where this may be for people who are more experienced, I don't know, and maybe it's also not a good idea, but where you're supposed to be the first person in the negotiation to name a number, because whatever number you name, it's going to set the tone for the rest of the conversation. So you're basically trying to insert some kind of control over the salary range that d gets discussed by naming a realistic number that is in line with your expectations, because it's going to go up or down a little bit, and obviously you're going to negotiate, but that way at least you kind of have a foot in the door. Whereas if you let the other person, the employer, name the number to begin with, then you might be at a disadvantage if it doesn't, not even close to your expectations. So I guess that's completely wrong advice. That explains everything for me.
I wouldn't say that. No, it's a nuanced topic, but I've always heard, like for any negotiation, I've always heard the saying, this is a little oversimplified, but whoever shares a number first loses. That's what I've heard. That's a very, very, very oversimplified thing, but and that's been said for years, that if you share the number first, you've given them sort of a chance to respond, and maybe you gave a number lower than they were going to offer, and now they've just saved all that money, or they were thinking 60,000, but you said 50, and they're like, okay, fine, 50, deal. And you never would have known what they had in mind.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And also, if you don't have experience before, I like what you said about not demanding a specific number, because it also, there are a lot of ways to be compensated for your job other than just work. And if you're just getting started, it can be extremely valuable to get a job at an important company that you believe in, or that could be a stepping stone to another job, even if it doesn't immediately pay you millions. That
That
can pay
too.
off in dividends over time. So you have to kind of be open to considering the wider picture. If
For
I'm
sure.
misunderstanding what you said, then correct me. But
No, I agree with that. I feel like that's something to go home and think about on your own, though. You want to find out their number, find out what they can offer you. And then, yeah, you should, as a younger job seeker, you should absolutely consider, like, what skills am I going to be learning? What opportunities are there for advancement? That can be even more important than for your long-term earnings, that can be more important to build really valuable skills right away.
But don't
Yeah, that's
immediately
more
say yes or no. Let them name the number, then think about it, and then come back with an answer, right?
like. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. You should never feel pressure to accept an offer on the spot. I would never recommend accepting a job offer on the spot. I would always ask for 24 to 48 hours. You could say, thank you for the offer. I'm so thrilled. I always do like to talk about important decisions like this with my family, though. Would it be all right if I take 48 hours and get back to you over the phone after that? You never should feel like you have to accept on the spot.
I like that. Do you, I don't know, send them a follow-up thanking them for the interview? Or is that old-fashioned?
Yeah, no, I love it. But I do an email. I like an email. Yeah. Then I like to do like the next day at lunchtime. Or I guess if you interview on a Friday, you can try to. I would do it Friday evening, just so it's not waiting till Monday. But normally, if you interviewed Monday, send it Tuesday lunchtime. Send it to each individual person and thank them. Mention something specific that you really enjoyed learning
I like
about and
that.
discussing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So customize it for each person in a way.
Absolutely.
Very
People
good.
ask me like. Somebody just emailed me and they had bought one of my ebooks, so I was willing to help them. And they said they interviewed with two people in one meeting, and they asked whose name should they put first in the email, in the thank you email. I said, no, you have to send a separate email to each one, and it should really be a personal thing. You should email person number one and tell them what you enjoyed speaking to them about and how you appreciate their time, and then email person number two and say what did you enjoy learning about with them and talking about with them, and thank them as well.
I love it. I love
Separately.
it. I mean, you're building a more personal relationship. So if you do get the job or you decide to accept it, it's like you have a special one-to-one relationship with this person already on your first day at work. Whereas if you
Yeah.
just, I don't know, if you just email the hiring manager and say thanks, and then you copy everyone else into the email, it's much more generic, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's great. That's great advice. What if you don't get the job? How do you handle rejection as someone, let's say you've made it through all these multiple rounds, you've done everything that you recommend someone does, and you still don't get the job. Obviously, this happens a lot. Do you have any tips for people just starting their career, how to handle rejection?
Yeah, I've got two good ones. One, just never stop applying until you've signed a job offer, or some people even say until you've had your first day of work, because you really never know. And I see so many job seekers get in this mindset of like, okay, this position is my dream job. And they have one interview and they're so, so excited, and they stop caring about other positions and they're so emotionally invested, and they actually stop like the job search effort of finding other positions too. And then when they're rejected, it's just so much of a letdown. They're emotionally and they don't have any traction with other companies too. Mm-hmm. So just stay level-headed and try to get multiple job offers and just keep going until you've signed an offer. I'd rather you have to reject a few job offers because you have too many rather than rely just on one and have it fall through. And then, you know, you've got nothing, and it's terrible. But so many job seekers do that.
I love that. Okay. So keep a pipeline open and never take for granted just because it seems like it's going to work out that it will.
Yeah. And then I think my other point, it kind of fits with this. Don't take it personally. And they're just, as a recruiter, I've seen behind the scenes, there are literally more than 100 reasons that you might not get a job that are not your fault. There are so many pieces out of your control that you're never going to hear about or see about. I'm talking about discussions behind closed doors. There could be a candidate who cost less money. That's recruiter talk, but I guess had lower salary requirements than you, or had a lower salary coming into the position and the company wanted to find a bargain. There could be another employer who wanted to hire somebody who had a higher salary because they thought that salary implied a higher level of experience and value. And so those are two completely opposite outcomes, just depending on what that one employer wanted. As a recruiter, I had a hiring manager tell us that he had too many men in his group and he wanted a woman, and he only wanted to see female candidates from us for a few weeks, which I don't think was legal. I'm not sure, but that's what we did. And so if you're a man and you had applied and you don't get the interview, you might be thinking, well, gosh, maybe my resume needs some retooling. But obviously that wasn't the reason. So just don't take any one rejection personally. Look at broad trends. And if nothing you're doing is working, then yeah, you need an adjustment. And if you're going on first interview after first interview with different employers and not getting to the second interview, then it's absolutely about what you're doing in the first interview, and something needs to change. But don't take any one rejection personally, because there's just so much that happens behind the scenes.
Okay, great, great advice. I know we don't have forever. I wanted to get a little bit into, let's say, if you do get the job, what happens during the first month? How do you make a good impression on your first day? That sort of thing, like this. Once you get the job, is there any guidelines you would give to someone to know how to succeed, how to start off on the right foot, and what signs to look for as to whether the job is a good fit or not?
I can just name all the mistakes I've made and on a checklist of what not to do. No, I think try to meet a lot of people in your first week to your first month, get coffees and lunches with people, like make an effort to email different, including from different teams. After you've met your team, you can find teams that work with yours and try to invite one of their team members to coffee and say, I'd love to learn about what it is your team does and how our two teams work together. Can I buy you a coffee and hear about it? Cause I'm new here. Trying to think, there was something else. When you're brand new and somebody explains something to you, write it down. Cause there's nothing worse for those other people than having to answer the same question multiple times. And I was guilty of this so much. I would be new and I'd be like, hey, can you show me this again? Can you show me how to access this Excel file again? And it would just drive people crazy. So it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to know nothing and to be learning everything, but try to only ask it once and really like take a good note or write it down, whether it's on paper or in a Word doc, do something, because you don't want to ask multiple times.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Is there anything else that you would say, don't do this in your first day or your first week or month on the job, like a total no?
I don't know. A lot of it depends on the company. I think that's what I said is like my biggest thing not to do. Is okay. Don't make somebody show you something twice, I think is a good approach.
I guess in a way that's also, I mean, you're shaping the way they perceive you. So you don't want to seem like you don't learn or you're not paying attention. And if you're asking the same question multiple times, obviously that indicates to them either you're not valuing what I told you the first time or you're just a slow learner. So that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
And if you do have past experience, so this won't really help entry level people, but in the future, once you're going into your second or third job, be very coachable and be open to learning how this new company does things. They don't want to hear from you. They don't want to hear, well, you know, my last employer did it this way. They want you to listen to their way. And then after a few months of observing, you can certainly bring new ideas. And sometimes an employer will hire somebody from a different company because they want fresh ideas in their group. But on the first day, they want you to listen to how they do things. So it's important to kind of go in with be a blank slate, sort of be very coachable. And that's really good to show in your interviews too. That's feedback that I always got in my job interviews as a job seeker, and hiring managers always loved that I was coachable and willing to, that was the word that they used over and over. So try to seem coachable. You'll get more job offers 100%, I guarantee it.
Okay, interesting. I like it. So what if you don't like the job? How do you deal with that? If you get there, you make the right impression, everyone likes you, they tell you you're coachable, whatever, and still something doesn't feel right about it. How do you decide or make the final call? And in some countries there are, in Austria where I live, for example, there's a 30-day rule for every job. It's a probation period. So you can decline the job within 30 days without it feeling personal, or you just have a right to do that. And the employer can also let you go within the first 30 days without there being any legal consequences for that. But that's not the case in every country. I mean, how do you navigate? I mean, obviously you're gonna go with your gut, but is there kind of, I don't know, etiquette you could follow or a protocol that would give someone who's new guidance as to what to do?
It's an important question. It's tough because there are so many reasons that you wouldn't like a job. It's like, are you not doing the tasks that you thought, or is your boss really difficult to work with? Or I think in general, you just have to look at your priorities. And I think people will tell you that you need to avoid gaps on your resume, or you need to avoid short stints at a position, you know, never leave within the year. I think the reality is it's more nuanced than that. And you can almost always get away with one of those. I've quit jobs without having one lined up. I've had gaps. I've had short stints. You can get away with one, like, you know, in a 1 to 2 year period. You can't, or it's going to be a lot more difficult to get away with more. So you shouldn't feel, what I'm trying to say is you should not feel stuck in a job for a year where you feel you're learning nothing, doing nothing, draining your energy, feeling down. You know, a year of your time is not worth that. So don't be afraid to go. But you don't want to do it too much. And I think if there are some good, but some bad, so let's say you're doing really good tasks that are interesting to you, but it's really challenging and you're a bit overwhelmed and your boss is really a pain too, maybe try to stick it out for 1 year. Be like, okay, I'm not going to be with this boss long-term. I really can't deal with him or her, but I'm going to learn a lot this year. So let me stick it out. So it always sort of depends, I suppose. And one final idea, if you do leave a company, just be very clear. And I joined an e-commerce company in Boston for 2 weeks, and then I quit because I got a different job offer from a company that was a position that was more related to what I had studied, finance.
Okay.
And so I went to my boss at this first company. I said, listen, I'm really sorry. I've got a job offer from a different firm that's just much more closely aligned with what I studied in school, and I've decided to accept it. I know this puts you in a bad spot. I know I've been here under a month. I'm truly sorry. And he said, that's fine. I get it. Thank you. Can you stay till the end of the week? And I said, yes. And so he understood. It wasn't ideal. He wasn't happy, is what I'm trying to say, but he did understand. So just once you decide what to do, just be clear and professional about it and communicate. And they might not be happy, but they should understand if it's a professional reason. Everybody makes mistakes or takes a job and then decides it wasn't what they thought. And that does happen.
And in terms of this context, is we're talking about someone who's just getting started on the career. So my guess is that an employer is going to be a bit more understanding towards someone if it's just their first or second sort of real job and they have a change of heart immediately and say, I think I'm going to go in another direction. That's what you're expected to do at the beginning. It's probably harder to get away with that, maybe taken more personally if 20 years down the road, you become really flighty and just, you know, skip out on a job, right? So play that, exactly. Just play that card and use your youth to your advantage in that case, I guess.
Yeah. And if you're in a great company, but you just don't love the role, then you can talk to them about that too. You can ask if you could try different responsibilities. And they might say no, but if you're at the point of wanting to quit anyway, it can't hurt to to ask, you know?
Good point. And that goes back to what you said earlier about, don't necessarily look for a good job, look for a good boss. So if you have someone who you can ask that question to, who can help you find a better role within that company, that's interesting. Yeah, that could be a better solution than just quitting and giving up.
Right. Yeah, a good boss would, I mean, theoretically want to help you. They should want to help you, and it's part of their job to help you develop as an employee. So yeah, find a great boss, and then it'll be a lot easier to ask a question like that. Ask about what other opportunities there are, or tell them it's not really fitting what you're doing. You know, it's not a fit in your current role. That'll all go a lot better with a great boss.
Great bosses. I'm sure there are lots of them out there watching, listening to this. So let them know they're appreciated. So they're few and far between. So they should get their props. Okay. I think that's been really helpful. And I know it's going to give a lot of value to anyone who watches this. I'm wondering, before we wrap up the conversation, if there are any projects that you want to plug, things that you're working on that you'd like to tell people about.
I just my website, careersidekick.com. Got more than 200 free guides and articles on everything from job interviewing to answering salary questions to writing a resume and cover letter, everything like that. 99% of everything on the site is free. So that's it. That's my full-time project. And a lot of job seekers tell me they're glad they found it and they send it to friends and family. And so I think it does help a lot of people.
I'm not getting paid to say this, but I really like the way that it's structured. It's very easy to navigate and find information. So yeah, I highly recommend Byron's blog and website.
Cool. I've got nothing else to plug. No, that's it. I just wanted to come here and help out.
So how can they contact you if someone wants to get in touch?
LinkedIn is a good way. I'm on LinkedIn. I usually accept requests if it doesn't look like you're about to pitch me something or sell me something. I don't offer individual coaching, so I don't want to waste anybody's time. I'm not a resume writer. I do have folks who I can recommend, but I'm very happy to connect. And I share a lot of my newer content on LinkedIn. So if we're connected there, you'll also see all of that new stuff as it comes out.
Perfect. Okay. Byron Clark, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. Great questions. I'm glad we got a chance to do it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I like the conversational format. I've learned a lot. I just have to go back in time and become like 20 years and be a fresh graduate again and start over and do everything right. That would be nice, right?
I wouldn't want to. It's tough. It's not easy. Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot.